Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Good morning, New York. Oh, I have a wonderful guest today. I've just been going through this book over and over again because it's wonderful. It's a wonderful new book. Author, I think you're really going to enjoy it. About it. I'm very touched by this book. It's a very sensitive book, very entertaining and enlightening. Yesterday is Brian A. Stevenson. He has more than 30 years of experience as a curator, a critic, an artist, an arts administrator in the Philadelphia area. He's also the chief curator at the James A. Michener Art Museum. He's written a wonderful new book, and I can't tell you how much I enjoy this book. It's called The Smile at the Heart of Things, and it's essays and life stories, but they're wonderfully told and so smoothly told as well. I believe you're on the air now. Are you there, Brian?
Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. I love this book.
Good morning.
I love this book. It's a, what,
I'm,
The
I'm
Smile
hearing you
at the
so
Heart
I've...
of Things. The Smile at the
I think
Heart
I'm,
of
I'm,
Things.
I'm going to have to meet this guy. I wonder who this guy is you're talking about. But
anyway. This guy is brilliant. I love this book and going through it. And A Smile at the Heart of Things, Essays and Life Stories. When I go through this book, Brian, my first feeling is your curator. And a curator, in a sense, is almost like a mom in that you take care of things that would otherwise be forgotten. Or mislaid.
Uh-huh.
You bring to attention
okay.
things that mean something to you, but otherwise other people might not have known about it. And your combination of using portraits, photographs, along with your story, it's a wonderfully inspirational idea. And each story in itself stands by its... I was comparing it in my mind last night as I was looking through it again to a well-written song, whereas
I looked
at the portraits... And I looked at the photographs. It was as if any moment a person could enter it, or maybe somebody might suddenly move in it. And then I would read the story, and then I'd look at the portrait again or the photograph, and just it just is so so great. What was your inspiration? The smile at the heart of things.
First of all, I have to say that you've uttered probably the most lovely and elegant and generous definition of a curator that I've ever heard in 20 some years of doing this job. So I thank you for that.
Well, you are. And in that
curator is mom. That's interesting.
No, you are, because it's a nurturer. It's a nurturer bringing to light the things we don't normally see. A curator brings to light. It's your placement of the work in the museum or lighting, or bringing to light, I guess would be a very good word, bringing to light.
It reminds me of something that I've begun to feel about the job in the last some years is, or about museum art museums in general, that they're kind of like restaurants, which in a way goes with your mom analogy.
Yeah.
meaning that you know, if you think of art as hopefully, ideally, in this world, a form of nourishment of the soul. Well, art museums don't generate the food. But we're kind of the middle persons, you know. We go find the food, we bring it all together, we cook it all up, and we put it on the walls and hope that somebody will come and have a bite, you know. And so that kind of goes with the mom thing.
It does.
I think the
nurturing of the artist, and you do, because in your book you brought to light many artists I did not know. And I love Cathedrals of Light, the photograph there. And that was, I believe, was that Evans?
Frederick Evans, that's correct,
yes.
Yeah. English photographer, yes.
And then Cecilia Reisman?
Cecilia Reisman, yes.
Yes,
that's right, a Philadelphia painter. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the angel awnings. And when I looked when it was painted, I went, oh, my gosh. I thought it was recent, and I guess it was from 1950. And it was very nice. But then you combine it with wonderful stories. In there. So back to the title, because I always want to know
yes.
about the title. Tell me.
Okay. How did I think of the title?
Yes.
Well, Maybe I'll answer that a bit obliquely, in the sense that I'll talk for a second about the aftermath of thinking about the title before I talk about the title.
Okay.
That makes sense. See, I'm a curator, so I never can say anything directly. I've got to dance around it for half an hour. No, don't worry. Anyway, first a concern I have about the title, which is that to assert in this world that we live in that there's a smile in a sense underlying all things, at the heart of things, is a kind of a bold statement. I mean, you know, because all you have to do is look around at the reality of the world we live in, and it's a tough place. I mean, it's a beautiful and wonderful place too, obviously, but just open the paper up every day, or listen to the news, or walk down the street, or whatever, and you see that the world is at best ambivalent at times. But all I can say is, having experienced that myself, acknowledging it every day, I still believe that there's underneath it all something beautiful. I think sometimes we have to go through sort of the valley of the shadow of death or something before we can see that. But I guess that's an answer to your question.
Thing. Yes, it's true. Again, you have a very nurturing soul, my friend. In that, I'm going back to the theme of nurturing. In that, you bring to light that which we do not see. You're right. There is a lot of horrible things, and as a paternal, maternal instincts of the arts, you bring to light what we would not normally see, as if it were the art was your child. To a certain degree, that you say, no, don't look at it because you're looking at the way it's painted. Look at it.
I would only add to that, maybe that hopefully if we're doing our job well, we bring to light what isn't normally visible, but we also bring to light what is so obvious and plain to be seen, but we miss it because it's so obvious, if that makes any sense.
It is. It's in that when they say even in the worst of people you could find some good if you look long enough, or if you can say something even in. But you have to look. I think we tended to stop looking. It's become a drive-through world where everything is fast.
Well, yeah.
And take it for granted that we don't stop. You would know this possibly. Somewhere I read they timed how long the average person, I think at the Met, stands in front of a painting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you happen to know that?
Well, what I'm aware of is I believe the Smithsonian did studies years ago, so some large museum entity, that timed how long an average person stays in one of those big Smithsonian exhibits that, you know, with all the bells and whistles. It's something like 10 or 12 minutes.
10 or 12 minutes.
Which is not very long. But see, I don't want to, in a way, that's interesting, but... But
it's true, but with that, when you're saying that 10 or 12 minutes, you know what's interesting about that?
Right.
That's almost as long as they recommend you meditate.
Oh, okay.
That when you meditate, even 10 minutes will relax you.
And
I love that this book, too. This is one of my favorite publishers, Tell Me Press.
Yes,
I love
yes,
the work
I know,
they
right.
turn out. TellMePress.com just turns out some great work, and this book especially. Now, I want to talk about some of the stories.
Okay.
Two people seem to just keep popping out at me as I read the book. And,
okay.
Well, I say people, one's not a person, but Helen and Sparky.
Helen and Sparky.
Tell me a little bit.
Well, Helen is my wife and to whom I dedicated the book. And there are a number of stories and anecdotes. And she you're right, she's a recurring character through the book. And really is my soulmate
Muse.
But I hate to say that in a sense because she's also an artist she has a life other than being my muse, you know, in a sense. but she is. There's so many things that we share
what you wrote about her. In the earlier part of the book, I have to read, Helen's Journey, I believe it was. I really feel the way you write, I really get to know each person. It's sort of like you've made it where the people will not be forgotten by this book. That each short story, I just said, oh, this is like I just met someone else new. I just met someone I didn't know.
I think there's something to that. I must, you know, I think, well, I look at a given story or a given part of the book, and I think, well, why did I write that, or what was the motivation, the urge, you know? And I think you're right. Sometimes it's something that my personal reason is because I have a feeling, you know, it's vague and uncuratorial as that sounds, you know. I tend to pay attention to those things, and if there's an intense feeling that I'm having about something, it feels like an invitation to me or a door opening to explore it, and the essay or the piece I write becomes the means of exploring it, and then it's kind of encapsulated and made concrete in the words. And then I go back
in combination with the portrait, right?
Yes, with some of that, correct, yeah. So some of the people that I wrote about, I also took pictures of, and so I included that because I thought it'd be interesting as a reference point to see the visual, my visual interpretation of the person as well as the words. But I do think there is something to what you say about memory, and just for me personally, I can't speak for how other people respond to them in that sense, but for me personally, there's something I can hold on to, because some of the people I write about are already gone in the book, and that's so it becomes
powerful
thing for me.
In your writing, you seem to give each of the people you talk about a kind of immortality.
Wow.
And that Mrs. Bader, your first piano teacher.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know how many people have influenced our lives, Brian, over the years?
Right.
Never got credit for it. Now, I don't know where Mrs. Bader is or even if she's around, but now I know
about
Mrs. Bader.
Yeah.
I know there was a... She's now become immortal through this.
That
you're curating again in this book.
Brian, the curatorial mom. I like that.
Yeah. I have to say, I don't know why, but I did get a sense that you focused a lot on the relationship between a son and mom. I got that in a lot of the photos.
Mm-hmm.
I sense that. Nature.
There's a lot about my dad in the book, too, I think.
Oh, yes, your dad and how he would like to buy a new one if you can fix it yourself. I love that.
Yeah, he was special. He was special, yeah.
And you learned a lot from him. Now, were your parents artistic?
No, oddly enough, I come from a more or less scientific kind of family, at least on the surface. My father was a geologist, a very, very successful, I would even say maybe prominent petroleum geologist in his day, and was responsible for some very significant oil discoveries in the American West. In fact, we used to tease him about, Dad, you know, couldn't you find a barrel or two for us, you know? Made a lot of other people rich. I really used to teach him about that.
I know, it's okay. No, I like what you wrote about your father. When I say that, I guess I just keep going back to it because it's a very sensitive book. I think men and women would enjoy reading this equally, the book. It's very intelligent. I almost think of it as, don't be embarrassed, but I almost got a Walden Pond kind of feeling as I went through it.
Gosh, you're putting me in some pretty august territory there.
Well, I did get a sense of a transcendentalist to your work, mm-hmm, in that mixing the nature with the actual person and your choice of photographs, which are all and portraits, which are beautiful, and I would not have known about them had I not read this. And Tell Me Press, they can find the book at Tell Me Press, www.tellmepress.com.
Yes.
You can also find it on Amazon Books, Barnes & Nobles, and any popular bookstore is going to have this.
Right.
It's out now. Am I correct?
Yes, it is.
Running. And this is just, it's a great book. I would give this as a Valentine's Day gift. I would give this because I do find it so full of your love of everybody you write about.
Well,
there's a respect and a love that I get in your writing that you do have this. Are you a very passionate person? Would you call yourself passionate?
You know, yes, although I don't wear it on my sleeve, to be honest. It's sort of in there, and but I'm not a.
I bet you remember people's birthdays, Brian.
Yeah.
I bet you remember because you worry that somebody's not remembering their birthday. Because your book, and I want to repeat the title again: "The Smile at the Heart of Things: Essays and Life Stories" by Brian H. Peterson, on Tell Me Press, www.tellmepress.com. And I get the sensitivity from this book. It's a very nice book. I would buy this for someone I loved. I'm sorry if I'm getting all mushy on you, but it's a very lovely book.
I'm starting to tear up here. No, really, thank you. I mean, I'm kind of embarrassed really by your praise. I must say when I wrote the book,
I find it like that. I think your book, it reminded me of something that was on the news recently. How many hours the is connected to technology.
Right.
And with that, how many hours are connected to technology, a phrase, I got up in the middle of the night, Brian, and I wrote down, turn off your televisions and turn on your minds. And that's how I felt about your book.
Huh. Well, thank you.
Pick up this book, because this is each story that I read about the person, and I felt I knew them, and then the way you so respectfully speak of them. And I love your quotes. I don't know, where did you find all these quotes? These are wonderful, too. Some of them are you.
Just stuff I remember, you know, from the stuff I've read. But I guess I wouldn't want to, in a sense, turn the book into a something that's sort of like an I hate TV book. I mean, I watch TV myself.
No, it's not
myself.
I hate TV book. It made me want to stop watching TV.
I guess what I would say is that if it has any effect in terms of helping people to value our connections, then maybe it's doing its job in a sense in the world. If that doesn't sound too pretentious.
In other words, the
relationships that we have, you know, people, how do we evaluate our lives when all is said and done? And Do we evaluate our lives according to the resume we build or according to the people that we care about and the relationships that we nurture? And I suspect it's ultimately much more the latter than the former. You know, so.
It's like a ripple in a pond. One smile can spread out and touch so many people and change so many lives. One compliment, finding the good, the one good thing in everyone you meet each day. And someone who normally, the elderly, who are basically ignored, just finding that one positive thing. Your hair looks nice today. You or something that's spreading out there. Could you, you have a favorite quote, perhaps, from the book that you could?
Maybe a little passage kind of thing?
Yeah, passage. Just, I want people to get a feeling because it's so hard to express. This is the medium, of course, it's radio, but express the kind of poetry of this book. It's not, I'm not saying it's poetry, but the meter. So if you could just, that would be very...
Well, I will, and if I go too long, just stop me. I thought that there's an essay I wrote about my parents' house in Missoula, Montana, where I grew up, and I had a point. The essay's called Saying Goodbye, and several years ago, it became so clear to me with the aging of my parents that these days are numbered, and I need to really honor the relationship that I have with
I
them
love
and,
that you chose this, Brian.
House.
Brian, I have the book open to that page by coincidence because I love the first line of it.
I was sitting on the back porch of their house just looking at the sunset, and this line came into my head, which I'll start with and then can read a paragraph or two.
Okay.
When I'm lying on my deathbed, I'm going to remember this place. Maybe the little things will mean the most to me then. The green plastic watering can on its side, barely visible in the tall, scraggly grass by the back door. The stone wall near the patio, covered with orange-colored lichens and puffs of black moss. The wrinkled old hat, the kind you can roll up and stick in your pocket, resting on a chair in the breakfast room. Yes, the hat. How many times have I seen it on my father's head while we walked up a trail? How many silly grins on his face while he wore that hat, holding up a string of fish for the camera or a saucepan full of just-picked huckleberries? Some men might wear an expensive cowboy hat or one of those stylish straw hats with a colorful cloth band around the top. Dad's hat says to the world, "You'll never find anything fancy on my head."
That's probably enough. That's great. I think that's one of my, by coincidence, you chose the one that was my favorite line when I opened the book, because I think it's so important to remember the little things.
I guess the sad postscript on that story is that that hat is now in a very sacred place on my dresser at home because my father is no longer with us.
People are always with us as long as we remember them in some way.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. Yeah. So.
That's very nice. And now, tell me about Sparky.
Sparky, yes. Sparky is our crazy mutt, our crazy purebred Brittany Spaniel mutt, who drove us absolutely bobo when we first got him. He was the puppy from hell, which I'm sure many people experience. But as he finally grew up and grew out of his craziness, he's become our friend, and my wife Helen calls him her empty nest baby because her children are grown up and off and they're grandkids now, and so she dotes on Sparky terribly.
Sparky in the book?
That's my wife Helen is a painter and
adorable.
A sculptor and she loves to draw him, and so there are a couple of drawings.
I loved it when I saw it. I went back and looked at it again. I said that's Sparky. So I can tell you really do like your Sparky there. Was that Helen I heard in the background?
No.
I thought I heard somebody, but it's very nice and. If you had one thing to say about this book that you would like people to know, what would that be?
I guess it would be, that is a hard one to sum it up. I guess maybe it would go back to the title, Nancy.
Smile at the heart of things?
Acknowledge I really want people to understand that in titling the book that way, I am not trying to gloss over the difficult aspects of life, but it's more a sense of that if you look for it, you'll find it. It's there. Even sometimes in the darkest times of our lives, which everybody experiences, you know, death of a loved one or divorce or loss of all the things that sometimes seem to conspire
think what the sense I'm getting is that you're trying to, in a shy way, to share that, to look for the smile at the heart of things. That
yes.
Even with everything, I think your book is trying to share with you, look for the smile at the heart of everything. And also, don't forget people. Don't forget them.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge area where you find that smile is in relationship with people, and I also think it's found just within yourself. That sometimes buried underneath all kinds of distractions and detritus of various kinds that we pollute our lives with, and if I could use such a strong word, there's a little bright spot in there. There's something that says yes to life and
Brian, I just got a call in, and one of my callers would like you to read another passage.
Oh gosh, okay. Well, you mentioned Sparky, and maybe in a more comedic vein, I could read a paragraph or two from the Sparky essay.
I would love it.
This is a little passage that talks about Sparky's behavior when I would come home from work on a given day and about his territoriality. Sparky's main territory is the kitchen. On work days, he's locked up there because he might wreck the house when we're not around. He always hears me walking up the steps to the back porch at the end of the day, And when I finally put my key in the door, he's scratching the glass frantically, peering out from between his paws, eyes opened wide in a manic, crazed look. When the door opens, he forces his way outside, twists his body into an S-curve, then vibrates so wildly that he looks like Chubby Checker on speed. His doggy butt twists back and forth violently, and he emits a desperate, high-pitched whine. The little stub of a tail wags so rapidly that it almost looks like a propeller, and I imagine him leaping into the air and flying away, eventually reaching escape velocity and going into orbit. This is his way of saying, I'm glad to see you. He's such a lovable guy. And you know what? We've had him for 9 years now, and I still go home from work, and he's still the same way. It's like it's the first day. He hasn't lost his amazing sparky enthusiasm for existence.
Well, it's a lot. I think Sparky and your book have a lot in common in that you both like to share your love for intangible things. You both to do it for the love of it. And the book, The Smile at the Heart of Things, Essays and Life Stories by Brian H. Peterson. Tell Me Press, one of my favorite publishers. They put out so many great authors, and I just enjoy every time. And you're not just coming from out of nowhere. You have been a photographer yourself for many years. You know art. And also, Mr. Peterson, you got a rave review in USA Today. I think I'm not the only one in love with you. Craig Wilson seems to love your work.
Well, it's what the younger generation calls a bromance now, I guess.
It's a bromance. Oh, yes, the bromance.
Isn't that the term that goes going around now? But
could not put down the book.
Well, it's one of those things that as a writer, as an artist, creative person, you sort of dream about, obviously in the sense of getting some attention for what you do, but also the way it happens. And no one sort of forced that fellow, Mr. Wilson, he kind of ran into the book and he picked it up and started to read it.
I love how he read it while he was at work and he said, "Don't tell my boss."
Yeah, right. I mean, that's music to one's ears as a creative person. You hope you can maybe once in your life at least do something that you know is nourishing to other people the way you've been nourished yourself by so many works of art and
people.
Well,
definitely, your voice is throughout the book. You can see that this book is a labor of love. I keep going back to love. I don't know, Valentine's Day. Get this book for Valentine's Day. This is an excellent gift. It's just the smile at the heart of things. You just, the love that you have and respect and bromance, as you said, the way you speak of men and women is just, it's almost like you're the parent of them all in some small, you're proud of them in each and every way. There's a certain pride when you speak of all these people that I love. And how this Walt Whitman, I noticed one photo in there, and I saw a photo of you, and I said you could be related.
Some people say I look like the composer Johannes Brahms sometimes too, which I guess is a compliment. I don't know, but my joke about that is that I keep my beard well trimmed while I'm still employed, but eventually I'm going to go for the full Walt Whitman look.
You're going to go for the full Walt Whitman.
Full Walt Whitman. I'm going to go for Rip Van Winkle, you know, with the ponytail.
And get the ponytail and everything.
Just kidding. But, Walt Whitman.
Yeah, go ahead. No, you go.
I was going to say, you mentioned Whitman. That was my first love, in a sense, when I was 18 years old, and I was stuck in a bus station in Portland, Oregon, trying to get back to Montana because my flight had been canceled, and I had a book of Walt Whitman with me, and for some reason, which I still don't quite understand, when I read that book, it was like a kind of a birth experience, in the sense of the world of Whitman came alive to me in a way that
was it. Oh, Captain, My Captain, or.
It was a small, slim volume of books from poems from Leaves of Grass, and just the strange, ornery, quirky, brilliant musical quality of the guy hit me, and I think it's because at that point maybe I had grown up enough myself to have enough sense of self myself to recognize self in another person. I don't know, but that was kind of the beginning.
Your book. Clearly a labor of love, clearly a labor of love. The smile at the heart of things, the smile, it's almost like the beginning of the lyrics of a song. It's the smile at the heart of things. I don't know. It is Essays and Life Stories by Brian H. Peterson. www.tellmepress, one of my favorite publishers. They just keep turning out more fantastic one book after another. Every book is a gem there. I love these guys. And also your work. I want to encourage people, Brian. I know you have to go back to curating now. And I want to thank you for taking time out to talk to me about
you.
Your book.
Thank you
the
very
smile
much.
Smile at the Heart of Things. The Smile at the Heart of Things. Essays and Life Stories. I'm telling you, I the song is in me somewhere for this, Brian H. Peterson.
You're sounding like Stephen Sondheim there or something.
Well, it's a great book. I encourage everyone to get it. Valentine's Day is coming up. Get it for Easter. Get it for any of the holidays. Get it just to get it for something. You know what? This would be a great book just to give it to somebody for no reason at all. For no reason at all than other to share Brian H. Peterson's love of his fellow man, woman, artist, and like it said, I'm telling you, turn off the TV, turn on your minds. That's what this book is all about. Brian, I want to thank you very much for being on my show, ComedyConcepts.com.
Thank you, Nancy.
And I hope this book does fantastic. I know I am going to treasure it always. Brian H. Peterson, The Smile at the Heart of Things, Essays and Stories, available at www.tellmepress.com, Amazon Books, Barnes & Noble, Borders, and any popular, well-versed bookstore in your area. Brian Peterson, love you, man.
Thank you, Nancy. Very grateful.
This has been Comedy Concepts with Nancy Lombardo. Thank you, and tune in again.